It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. We do have to start with some apologies to Ridley Scott.
Why?
Because I decided to look it up and be like, does everything he's done suck except Alien? Okay. And first off, forgot about Blade Runner. So, got to give him credit there.
Okay.
But then, dude has, I mean, among other producing and writing and stuff, has directed 60 films.
Oh, wow, that's a lot. I didn't know that.
Some of them are little short films and stuff, but some of them are really good films, like Thelma and Louise and Gladiator and shit that doesn't make you think of Ridley Scott. And what I determined when I looked at it is Ridley Scott is not a bad director. He's a bad sci-fi director.
Mm.
Alien was good. Blade Runner was good. Every other sci-fi, pretty crap.
I've never seen Thelma and Louise, and I didn't like Gladiator, so.
You didn't? Oh. See, I never saw Gladiator, but I mean, it is widely believed to have been a good film. And this is what I'm basing this on.
No, I'm sure it's just me. I just didn't like it.
And this is what I'm basing it on, because I know so many people who hated, you know, Prometheus and Covenant and stuff like that. But no, he did a bunch of stuff, just the not sci-fi stuff that is pretty good. So apologies to Ridley Scott, who I have it on good authority as a regular listener to our show.
Okay.
That is what the voice is telling me. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that has it on good authority that Ridley Scott is a regular listener. I mean, you don't know. It could happen. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 498.
Yes, it is. We are 9 days away from recording episode 500. Mm-hmm. Despite my explicit request not to have RSVPs, two people have RSVP'd that they will try to make it. So we got that going for us. They did not claim they would make it, but they would try to.
Well, I hope they can.
Yeah, that'd be good. We'll see what happens with that. Sorry, I'm very tired. Not feeling good today.
Last night while I was trying to sleep, I was imagining the 500th episode with all these people participating. Like it was a Zoom reunion show. Like we made a show about two guys who podcast, and they have
and they
have these long suffering wives that put up with our stupid hobby, and then we have all these friends, like some of them run the comic shop we hang out in and all this stuff.
All the quirky characters.
Yeah. And now we're gonna have our reunion show on Zoom, you know, like you do.
I'm into it. Let's fake it.
And because we're supposed to be so different from one another, but still friends, you know, maybe the show was called Oddcast. Get it? Oddcast.
I love how you acted as though that was off the top of your head, as though you didn't plan that a while back.
No, I just thought of it last night.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. The look on your face was like you were pulling it out of the air right now. It was called something like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, yeah. Super slick.
No, actually that was me having to remember what I came up with.
Oh, so you did have to re-pull it out of the air.
Kind of. I had to stop and go, wait, what did I just say?
Remember that thing that I remembered?
Yeah, I had to stop and go, wait, what did I just say? Oddcast. I had to think of it. I did have to think about it actually for real. because I forgot.
Episode 500 might have to be called Oddcast Reunion. Or this episode might be called the Oddcast Reunion. I don't know. It depends. If I name it that now, because this is the only episode where we talk about it, but then we talk about it in the next episode and episode 500, I'll have to retroactively change the name of
Episode. Everybody who's going to participate should think about what their character is, like what character they played on the show, and also what deep secret does their character have that it will be featured on a very special episode of Oddcast.
I like this, and I especially like this. I'll tell you why. At least one or two people on 500th episode will not be this caught up. So everyone else will have done this, and they won't, and I will find that hilarious. So yeah, listen up, everyone who's on the 500th, be thinking. Decide what character you play on our show, Oddcast, and what big revelation spoilers will come up in a future very special episode of Oddcast, which has been renewed for another 500 episodes. As long as my ISP doesn't, you know, kick me off. Okay, so for those of you just joining us, you're going to be confused. Here's how this works. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, a lot of cool people who have been helping out, except really just two or three, but they really have been putting in the work. The rest of you should get in there. But some people, you know who you are, been really helping out. Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions. Things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its long-running TV show actor servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. That's my talking symbol there. I know it looks like living mustache, but it's talking. Do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is really most of the show. So it's first day of school today.
It is.
No.
It's not?
But it was like that. Today was the first day that some ACT employees went back to the offices.
Oh.
And included in that was my wife.
Mm.
And so after I dropped her, I packed her lunch last night and I dropped her off this morning and I was like, it feels like first day of school. So yeah, that was weird. It tired her out, which doesn't surprise me. Like, just the basic moving around the office is so much more physical activity than you get when you're in the house. And Trish is pretty much in the house. Like, I've been going to the gym and I run the errands and things, but she's basically been at home. So
why did they decide to do that, to have everyone, is it everyone coming back? Or
no, just no.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's some, it's being phased back. Nobody's required to at this point.
Mm.
Everybody can work for you. They did surveys of like, do you want to go back? When do you want to go back? How much do you want to go back? You know, that kind of thing. And I think Trish is only going to do it sometimes. But yeah, there's just some people and certain things are easier to get done. And some people, their remote situation is driving them crazy, and so they'd rather be in the office. And you know,
yeah,
I think today was fun. A lot of people visit. I mean, Trish has her own office with a door that shuts, and she basically stays in there, so that's not a problem. And people would come to like her doorway and talk to her, but her office is big enough that that's pretty far from where she is. So, yeah, we'll see. And I mean, you know, if it goes to shit, I had to remind her today, I was like, you know, just so you know, I trust you, but any risk you're taking today, you're also risking me. Keep that in mind. Because that's the thing is, I've had to deal with this. Because again, I go to the gym every day. Yeah. I go to massage therapy. I run the errands. Trish basically hasn't left the house in months, hardly. Like very rarely. And so none of this had come up for her before. And now I'm like, you need to keep this in mind because you're going to come home and I'm going to smooch you and then we're both dead. You know how it is.
Yeah. So it, so she was kind of worn out afterwards, huh?
It was a little tiring, which I expected. And yeah, and I think just changing pace. I mean, she spent the whole day sitting in an office chair, which uses like different muscles than sitting in bed, which is where she's been doing it on a little like lap desk thing.
And there, I imagine there were some drawbacks, but also some advantages for you in terms of,
well, it was, I was kind of scared about how today worked. As it turned out, it didn't matter.
Oh.
I had major issues today, gastrointestinally.
Oh no, I'm sorry to hear.
And so I spent the bulk of the day sleeping with intermittent trips to the bathroom. So I did not get a lot done, but it was very weird not having her. The cats were concerned, especially Addy, because Addy spends all day with her. So he was legit like pissed off. He's like, "Where's mom?" He was very angry about that. But yeah, we'll see. Tomorrow she's only going to go in the morning, and then yeah, they're still working out what I've sort of asked her to come up with a general typical schedule, because it impacts my schedule and it impacts, you know, what I get her for lunch and stuff like that. So.
Right.
We shall see. The really weird one is in a few weeks. She's going to be away for a bit. But I will talk about that another time, I think. How is your week?
Okay. Fine. Let's see. We saw Enola Holmes.
Oh, yeah. We're probably going to watch that this weekend. We haven't done it yet, but been getting pretty mediocre reviews. What'd you think?
Well, it's so, you know, things that are made for a younger audience are fine. Mm-hmm. As long as if you're an older audience, you don't notice so much. But it was kind of hard not to notice that it was made for a younger audience.
Yeah.
And that's my only real criticism of it. I mean, I think everyone did a fine job. I think the story was fine. It's just you could often tell that, oh, this isn't made for me. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think there is something to be said for people who can make something for younger audiences that adults can also watch and not feel
freaked
out by it.
But it's very much a particular talent.
Yeah. For sure.
And it's not everybody has it. And I mean, you can see it back in the day. A lot of children's programming was like that. The classic versions are like Henson stuff or Rocky and Bullwinkle, things like that. But it can be a tricky thing. More and more, I'm seeing stuff where I'm like, I didn't enjoy this movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. It's just clearly not for me. Like, I didn't enjoy it, but that's talking about me, not about the film.
Right, right. I thought the last episode of Lovecraft Country was really good. I liked it a lot.
I think it is. I have sort of had to get independent outside confirmation because, once again, could not be more different than the episode that it was taking the place of.
And
I really liked that episode. And I don't think there was anything wrong with this. And I think one could argue this is better in a lot of ways, but like, I enjoyed that story and I was sad that story wasn't here. And this was very different. But no, I think it was, I mean, so I have a huge bias in my head that I'm having trouble separating from, but insofar as I can, no, I think it was awesome.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. So, yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to a week from tomorrow. They're going to have the people that made the Haunting of Hill House.
Is it a week from tomorrow? I thought it was the 13th.
No.
Is it the 6th? Or no, it's the 9th.
The 9th, yeah.
Okay.
And that's the Bly House, Haunting of Bly Manor, I guess, which is supposed to be based on Turning of the Screw, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, they changed the Hill House thing a lot. So I imagine they'll, you know, it won't bear that much resemblance to the original material. But that's fine. I mean,
awesome too.
I kind of like this idea of, and I hope they keep this up, where they go, you know, let's take classic horror stories that seem to revolve around a house, and let's adapt them. I think that would be great if they just kept doing that.
And in both the ones they've picked, these have been remade over and over and over and over and over again. So a lot of people associate it with a story that's not the original story anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And they have said that, like with the first one, there's going to be a shit ton of background ghosts you may or may not notice. which I'm excited about, because that was an awesome thing about Hill House.
We might watch Hill House again. Just,
you know. I thought about that. It's just 10 hours, you know? I'm not... And so much of it was the suspense and the mystery, and I'm like, no, that won't be there because I know what happens. So I don't know. I want to watch it, but I don't know that I could do it.
Well, another thing is, there's, you know, we kind of like watching this kind of thing around this time of year. A lot
Yeah.
But it's surprising how hard it is to find either anything at all or anything decent to watch. Well,
tons of shit is coming out this year. Like, people are working at it. Hulu's got a bunch coming, and I'm very excited for most of it. Hulu's got a new movie that's based on Clive Barker's Books of Blood anthology. It's an anthology film, and it was something that he wrote back before he was making movies. Clive Barker is actually a fairly prolific and fairly good horror author, which a lot of people don't realize, and I only recently realized. And in Books of Blood, the book, one of the stories is The Hellbound Heart, which is the story that was turned into Hellraiser.
Oh.
And I don't know that that's going to be here, but it's that there. It's based off of that anthology. And then they're starting a new series called Hellstrom that's going to be longer run thing that I think is maybe based off of an anime, but it's another one of those like Demon Hunter kind of shows that looks kind of cool. But yeah, everybody's really pulling out the stops this year for October. Everybody's trying to advertise all sorts of crap coming out this year. I think because they know everybody's stuck at home.
There's a series that Sam Raimi did called, I think it's called 50 States of Fear or something like that. And it's
yeah, but isn't it on fucking Quibi?
It is, and it premiered in April. I mean, I'd love to watch it. It sounds really cool, but I'm not going to sign up for Quibi.
No.
So.
Oh, but this reminds me. You had mentioned Peacock, and I hadn't until you had mentioned it realized that it's the whole service is free with ads.
Yes.
There's a little premium version, but who cares about that? There's a ton of stuff on there that's free with ads. And I put it on there because Mel Gedroych and Sue Perkins, who are two of my favorite British comedians and who were a comedy team for years, did a thing on there where that's a comedy where they play professional assassins. That's apparently really funny. And an NBC show that I had heard about but I didn't know where to see it in its entirety is there called Noughts and Crosses, and it's a British alternate history where black people are the dominant race.
Yeah, I've seen that on there,
and I've been very curious about both of them. They also have every season of Murder, She Wrote and like a ton of other shit.
They also have Brave New World, which
The newest miniseries,
which we thought was pretty good.
I haven't seen that one. I've seen they've done a few over the years. A few versions of Brave New World have happened, and I've seen some of them. Yeah, Peter Gallagher was in one a while back, and I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're gonna watch the last episode of Raised by Wolves tonight. We haven't watched it yet.
We have not watched the second to last one either. It's a tendency we have with these shows that come out slowly. The penultimate episode is so often a major cliffhanger that we wait until we've got the last episode.
Yeah.
So,
also we finally were able to watch the last season of The Good Place because it actually wasn't on Netflix until like this past week.
Oh, really? They lied. Oh, did they break it up or something?
I don't know. I mean, we watched the whole thing.
Binge and?
Well, I mean, I felt like it started a little slow, and then it was the same old to me, but maybe I just couldn't remember everything. But it didn't take long for it to really catch its stride, I thought. And I was like, oh, this is really great. But then,
to be fair, every single season I feel that way about. Every season of The Good Place, they start off with sort of a new thing, and I'm like, I don't know if this is the same feel. And then quickly it's like, no, wait, this feels like the real thing. Even the first season's like that. The first couple episodes, I was like, is this my thing? And then I got into it.
I didn't really get into the ending very much. I thought the ending was, I just didn't like it. But it wasn't, I mean, that was just me personally. I'm sure that it was fine for most people.
You're dead inside and we can't be friends anymore. I understand.
I won't talk about what about the ending I didn't like because I didn't want to spoil it for people.
I mean, it's a very good idea. There's so many spoilers in that show. But it's a great show, people. Everybody watches. It's one of my favorite shows ever. That and Pose.
How was your week?
We did watch some stuff. Like I said, we're two episodes from the end of Raised by Wolves. Still not enjoying it. I have broken into the third season of 12 Monkeys, and they are not going to settle down.
Mm.
Like they have jumped into it's third season. We're shaking every fucking thing up. People are dead. People are changed. People like all over the place, just right out of the gate.
I don't know if we've seen season three or not. I think we have. I don't remember.
As usual, season two ended on a big reveal / cliffhanger kind of thing, sort of the same way season one. A way that it ends, but it's like, oh, you've got bigger shit to worry about next time. I was pleased because in the premiere of season three, a person talks to a future version of themselves, and they specifically say a lot more stuff happens, and you're only about halfway through it. And I'm like, that's perfect because there's exactly two more seasons. So that gives me hope that they actually wrap this shit up.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, the crazy character who seemed like they might be evil but is actually good now is the best character, because that's how these kind of shows work. It's fun crazy.
Is that the same gal that was on that Eugene
Levy? I don't know. I've never seen her before, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm still into that. I'm very much now, like, I need to find a different show that I'm watching also, because I can't really binge this. And I don't like binging stuff anyway. Generally speaking, I will not watch more than two episodes of a show a day at the absolute most, usually one a day or less, because I want my brain time to process it and things like that. Mm. Watched a couple movies not worth mentioning, I think. Oh, no, we did watch one worth mentioning. We watched Unpregnant on HBO Max.
Yeah, I've seen that up there. We haven't watched it.
I think it's good. I think it's good, and I'm going to recommend it. It is obviously made for a younger audience than us, but that didn't bother me. It worked fine. Trish was a little more conflicted than I was, but I absolutely understand why she was conflicted. And we both enjoyed it. Here's the thing. This is a movie about a 17-year-old having to secretly travel cross-country to get an abortion because her home state and none of the states around her all won't allow it without parental inform and parental consent.
Hmm.
And so this movie is making big statements about the right to abortion. But it's a mainstream movie, and it's very much a odd couple buddy comedy road trip movie, which means it has all the faults those movies have. Primarily, so many loose ends that don't get tied up, or that get tied up unrealistically quick, and certain situations that feel hyper unrealistic because that's what makes it an adventure rather than we just drove for a day and a half, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's like, you know, look at any of the great road trip movies, and there are certain bits where it's like, wow. They ran afoul of some, like, wild hillbillies. These hillbillies seem especially ridiculous. It's like, yeah, because that's why it's a comedy adventure thing. And there's some of that. And it stands out more because this is a movie that is trying to say something about access to abortion, whereas most movies of this type don't mean shit.
Yeah.
So you don't need to worry about it. But there's a little disconnect of sort of trying to keep track. That being said, it was quite entertaining. It was not too long. It was well acted. I enjoyed it. And its messaging was stuff that I approved of, personally. So yeah, I would recommend that one. It's on HBO Max, and I liked it. Last night, I made Trish watch. I could have sworn I made her watch it before, but maybe she hadn't seen it. Lady Hawk. I got in the mood again to watch Lady Hawk. Love that movie. Love that movie so much. But it's different now because I've had some realization about it. What brought it up is I think I recently was watching some clip from a talk show that had Michelle Pfeiffer in it, and that always makes me think of Lady Hawk because that's the first place I saw her, as is the case for most people who weren't really into Grease too. And I realized I've always known that I absolutely fell in love with Michelle Pfeiffer in that movie. And I had a huge crush on her for years and years and years and years and years afterwards. But I realized I don't know that all the responsibility falls on that movie, but that movie was incredibly formative for me, and instilled in me a lot of my thoughts about gender roles and about love in just hugely problematic ways. But I stuck with it for years because, yeah, there is not a lot of agency to Michelle Pfeiffer. There is maybe more than similar movies. And I thought Rutger Hauer was a great hero. Rutger Hauer is just a brutish idiot of a man. Like, ugh. There's nothing to admire about his behavior in this movie, but I thought he was great. I very much related to Matthew Broderick's character in it. And felt like that was, you know, because he's always making jokes and stuff like that. And that I very strongly related to that. And this was pre Ferris Bueller. For years, this was my version of Matthew Broderick.
Right.
This is what I thought of when I thought of him. And yeah, it's such a beautiful love story that really is not that beautiful and doesn't make a ton of sense. But it's a gorgeous film, and it has a soundtrack that I love to this day. The whole movie is incredibly 80s. And a lot of the movie's faults can largely be put at the feet of it was made in 1985. Trisha's first thing was, well, it definitely doesn't pass the Bechdel test. And I was like, of course not. I don't think it has two women in it. At all. And she's like, oh no, there was this one other woman. I'm like, yeah, she had no lines. Her only line was And then we remembered there was a little girl who said, what are you doing down there, when she was looking at somebody crawling in a grate. And then later a different little girl in a completely different scene using the same dubbed over child's voice saying, he's stealing daddy's shoes. So technically there was a second female character somewhere in there, but yes, they never have a conversation with Michelle Pfeiffer. No women in this movie. But other than the flaws that largely have to do with when it was made, I think it holds up. It's got really good action sequences. Like I think they do really good like fight choreography and stuff. Not necessarily realistic. There are people who go down because they get a fist to the neck, you know, casually, you know, the same bullshit as usual. Soldier number three. But Trish said she thought it was fine. She's like, I didn't love it. She says, I get why you did at the age you were. And it's funny now, because now my favorite person in the whole movie is Leo McKern, well-accomplished British actor playing the very old drunk hermit monk. Like, he's my favorite thing now. And I'm like, no, I relate to him now. None of this, you know, 16-year-old Matthew Broderick, the mouse. No, I'm like, no, I'm the drunk priest who fucked everything up early on.
So did you see it in the theater?
No. My sister saw it, loved it. bought the soundtrack. My whole family fell in love with the soundtrack, which is 100% instrumental and is composed and produced by Alan Parsons of the Alan Parsons Project and performed with him and his people and the London Philharmonic.
Mm.
I think the soundtrack is incredible. It is also incredibly 80s. There were some rights issues, so when you watch the movie now, some of the music has been changed. Hmm. Weirdly, when I get the soundtrack on Appatoons, it's fine. It's all there, so it's very weird. But for years, I wore out multiple cassettes that were recordings of my sister's LP.
Hmm.
I loved that soundtrack.
So how old were you when you saw it, finally?
Still pretty young, I'm guessing. Somewhere around 10 to 12.
Oh. Well, that would have been, I mean, you were what, 8 years old when it came out?
Was I? Oh, 85. I probably was 8. Yeah. I could see it being that long. I mean, we had to wait. I didn't see it in the theater, so.
Hmm.
We had to wait until it was on video. But by then, I had the soundtrack memorized, so. Yeah, so we watched that, and that was really fun.
I don't remember when I first saw it. I did not see it in the theater, I'm quite certain, so I must have seen it about the same time you did, probably.
It's a really great fairy tale. And like all fairy tales, when you're an adult, you're like, this is oversimplified and doesn't make sense. And really, that's not love. That's stalking and like you know, that kind of shit. All of those problems. But in the same way, like very much. And yeah, but also, yeah. And Michelle Pfeiffer fell in love with her. She epitomized what I thought was the most attractive type of woman for decades, which was very pale, very thin, very well-defined bone structure, especially her cheekbones. Like that standard image was what I thought was like the ideal of feminine beauty for years and years and years. And so many white boys like me have felt that way. It's hilarious now because I'm so the exact opposite. Like, give me Ruby from Lovecraft Country in a heartbeat.
So you saw her in that movie before you saw her in Batman or this.
Oh yeah.
Second Batman.
I was really excited she was going to be in Batman. Of course, when I saw Batman at that age, I did not like that movie.
Oh.
Very much did not like that movie. Since then, I have come to appreciate it for what it is. But at the time, I was not a fan.
Hmm.
Although I was enough of a fan that I went to see the sequel, and the sequel was horse shit. Oh, that movie sucked. And that was when I was out. I was out of Batman from then until Batman Begins.
Hmm.
I have not seen any of the really shitty ones. The And Robin and Forever. Haven't seen those. I have seen Dark Knight Rises, so I have seen one of the shitty ones.
Yeah, that wasn't very good.
I recently watched the Honest trailer for it, and I'm like, oh my god. I had forgotten some of the bad things, but also this brings up new horrible things that I had missed. Like, oh, so bad.
In the comics, Bane is actually a pretty interesting character.
I went and read up on him. He is.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
And I mean, you can't hear in comics, but he probably doesn't talk like this.
Well, what they do with him in the new Harley Quinn animated thing is pretty, pretty funny.
Do they mock that feature?
Yeah. But also they do try to incorporate some aspects of his comic character in terms of his general intelligence and things like that.
His backstory I found very interesting.
Very interesting, yeah.
In the comics.
Yeah.
Or and I then, should say, in the wall of text that is Wikipedia's discussion of
the comics. No, he's a very interesting character, really, in the comic books. And
I do love those, though. Every once in a while, I've talked about it before, I need to record me just reading those Wikipedia entries. Because you'll have shit like Bane and like, oh, he was raised here and then this happened and all this is like, as talking for a small time, he was God or like, you know, He once kicked Galactus in the nards and then had to go to a different dimension for a few years. But then he came back all white and good now with wings. But then later, a witch cast a spell on him, which turned him back to normal.
I think one thing that's interesting about him that hardly anybody does in the visual medium is he pretty much only used Venom to sort of bulk himself out in his opposition to Batman. And after he was done with Batman, he didn't use Venom anymore. In fact, he didn't like it.
A luchador. Yeah.
He didn't even like it. And he fought the cartels that sold it and everything else. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Also, before anybody comes in with it, yes, I understand Galactus is Marvel and DC. I shouldn't have said anything, though, because angry comments would only improve our audience level.
Well, I wasn't going to say. I thought, well, you know, he clearly knows the difference, but we'll see.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't God ever either.
Well, no, I know,
didn't cast a spell on him.
Right, but yeah.
Whenever the craziest shit happens with, like, small-time characters, it's always something to do with Galactus.
Okay, I don't know.
Oh, but the big news, I finally joined Scribblefile.
Or Scribblefile. I thought you talked about that last
I think week. I probably had joined. I finally started doing shit on there.
Okay.
Reading the forums, started critiquing other people's works. And I was very nervous about it. And so I wrote the critique and then I immediately private messaged the author and was like, "Hi, I just critiqued your work. Just so you know, it's my first critique on here. So if it's bad, will you please tell me how to fix it?" And instead she's like, "No, it was great." Well, first of all, she's like, "I'm sure it'll be fine. As long as you were honest and respectful, it'll be fine." And then she wrote back. She's like, "Okay, I've read it now. No, it was great. It was very." And then she and I talked a whole bunch because it was multiple parts and I ended up critiquing all of them. And it's a short story set in the same universe as a novel she already wrote, but it's like a prequel story about some of the characters when they were younger. And so we were talking about that a little bit and we got into a whole discussion and that was good. And it was also good because by the third part of it, I was like, "Okay, so my commentary got really kind of snarky here. I hope that's okay." She's like, "No, that's fine." She's like, it's still constructive. And she's like, "And you and I have had conversations and you've had parts that weren't snarky. So it's why, like, without that, it might've been an issue." But yeah. And I was like, "Well, yeah, it was that got me into this." Cause I was at the point now where I'm like, I feel like I know these characters. So I would get like, really, I'm like, "That's not how this character is. What the hell is happening? They're smarter than this," and things like that. So.
Right.
I screwed it up. So her stuff is not in Spotlight currently. So I didn't get as much karma for it, which even she warned me about after the fact, but I was like, I think it takes 5 karma points. And at the time I had like 3 point something to post something. And I'm like, also, since I've been editing the book, I have nothing. Like, I don't have anything to post. And it's me. So like, once I write it, I'm going to rewrite it at least once before I show it to anyone.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I have a feeling I'll get to 5 karma points by that time. And sure enough, I'm above 5 now. And I don't care. It's pretty cool, though. I've been learning out. There's a lot of good stuff on there on writing query letters for publishers and agents. And so that's been good to know. A lot of stuff involving how things are formatted. It's really hard nowadays because the bar is so low and there are so many submissions that apparently the tiniest things can make an agent or a publisher just disregard your query, including in some cases things like they look to the top right of the first page for the contact info and stuff. And if you have it on the top left instead, they're not going to bother. Not all agents do that, but some, like, I have so much shit. I don't have time for somebody who's formatted it. Not industry standard.
Huh.
So
interesting.
I'm working for that, but I fully expect to get rejected a ton and ton and ton. So I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that's how it goes for everybody, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But yeah, in this community, I think you might like this community. There's a lot of resources on self-publishing. There's a lot of discussions about, you know, tropes and outwork. They have lots of separate discussion groups for like different genre types and things like that. I saw a forum thread that I didn't feel like diving down the wiki rabbit hole of it, but the title was "What Are Black Cliches in Books That You're Tired Of?" And it already had like 6 pages to it.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's interesting because I can pick up stuff from that. So we'll see. But yeah, I've been enjoying that. Now I actually need to write something again. I was planning to do it today, but then, you know, my butt.
Well, do you think you're going to sort of dive into the whole Becca Lowenstein thing or?
No. For just marketability reasons, I'm going to do, the next novel is going to be the sequel to Odd Wings.
Oh, really?
Which I'm pleased to say, I actually know what the general plot of it's going to be now.
Oh, you know, you said that already. I remember
now. I knew the bits and pieces I wanted, but I didn't know what the actual story was. And it came to me the other day. So I'm mad about that. I'm pleased about that. But probably before that, I've got a couple of short stories and sort of exercise, like ideas I have that I don't know what they'll be yet that I want to sort of throw out first. Sure. And I just want to spend a little time writing about something else. But yeah. I've got a very specific short story in my head that has been wanting to get out for a while. So that'll probably be the next thing. It doesn't have a title or anything at this point. But.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. I thought I had more stuff, but I don't think so. And we're getting later, so we should probably draw a thing. Are you ready for a thing?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for a thing.
It's a thing. This one flum. This one is from Bloodsbubble.
Okay.
This one is from, holy shit. This one is, even now I'm nervous, from Blood Sparrow.
Okay.
Why was that so hard? I swear I am not on anything right now. Do you know the difference between Sorry, we'll read this, but then we probably won't spend a lot of time on it because I forgot some very important shit I wanted to talk about. Do you know the difference between a raven and a grackle? What is your opinion on grackles? Blood Sparrow.
I don't know the difference.
This is weird. That would have been my answer in its entirety until last night.
Oh.
Last night, I was watching a shitty paranormal investigation of a haunted house movie.
Yeah.
Like I do. I'm not even finished with it yet. But at one point, one of the people, when they came to the house, saw this painting and said, those are grackles, and grackles are frequently associated with the occult, and they would send messages between different, like, devil worshippers and witches and shit. And from what I could see in the picture, they're a blackbird, but they have bits of white on them, I think.
Okay.
But otherwise, no. I'm terrible at this. I can't even really do crows versus ravens, except ravens are bigger. I used to think crows had yellow beaks, but no, crows have black beaks also. They look like ravens. They just are smaller. I don't know what has the yellow beak. Is that like a magpie or what? I'm not good at differentiating my blackbirds. So Blood Sparrow, educate us. Go on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Talk to us about the blackbirds. And also, what is your opinion on grackles? Implies that there are reasons we should specifically have opinions on grackles.
Yeah, I was going
to I want to know what those reasons are. and based on what you tell me, I may develop opinions on grackles. We'll see. Thanks for your question. All right, now I have to talk about this other thing. So, I'm reading to my wife. as I do. And we just finished 13th volume of the Dresden Files. And she wants a little break before we go to the 14th. But an entire novel is not a good idea because that'll take too long and she'll forget the story in Dresden Files.
Right.
So I'm like, I'll read you some short story shit. In fact, I will read you some stories from N.K. Jemisin's How Long Till Black Future Month, because those stories are awesome. As you probably don't remember, the first story in N.K. Jemisin's How Long Till Black Future Month is a, she calls it a pastiche. I call it a response to the famous Ursula K. Le Guin short story, Those Who Walk Away from Omelas, that we have spoken about on this podcast before.
Okay.
I'm familiar with Those Who Walk Away from Omelas. I had never actually read it. A while back, I bought just that short story on Kindle, but had not yet read it.
Okay.
So what I did the other night with Trish is I read to her Those Who Walk Away from Omelas, and then immediately after read to her Jemisin's story, which I think is called Those Who Stay and Fight, which is a different, it is her take on a city and how awesome that city is and what the cost of having that awesome city is. And so it is in the same style, but very distinctive from Those Who Walk Away from Omelas. First of all, both incredible stories. Those Who Walk Away from Omelas has a lot more in it. Like, I knew the plot, for lack of a better term, of that story. There is a lot more to it, and I very much appreciate that, and I highly recommend reading the story. It is not very long at all. Those Who Stay and Fight, I had read before, again, knowing the basic structure of Those Who Walk Away from Omelas. Whole different feel having just read Those Who Walk Away from Omelas. The entire thing really got the mind racing from anthropological and sociological perspective, and thinking about society and how it works and how it should work and how I want it to work and things like that. And very interesting also, because afterwards I mentioned to Trish that the city described in Jemisin's story was kind of, I liked that one. Like, I kind of thought that was what I wanted for my perfect city kind of thing, or at least I had leanings that way. And she very rightfully pointed out that city is essentially a fascist government. And I thought about it and I'm like, you are correct. I don't know that this has changed my opinion about that. But the big take home from it is both of them, and especially both of them together, incredibly thought provoking, and has sort of possibly changed my, or is in the process of changing my views, or is definitely shaking up my views on society and government. And so that's been really cool.
Interesting.
And some of them are very much, some of the stuff, difference between them, you can tell is very much the period of time when they were written.
Yeah.
Jemisin's story gets a lot more specific in some ways in terms of sci-fi technology aspects to it. And also they're both really fun to read out loud. They both are done in the style of someone telling a story to the reader who is an actual person with whom they are interacting. So they're both essentially monologues, and they're really fun. So I highly recommend people read them, and I highly recommend people read them to someone else, because it's fun. They should do that. And as is always the case, you especially should read them, because
how do I get them?
Well, Those Who Walk Away from Omelas, like I said, you can just buy it by itself on Amazon. Or you could buy whatever the short story collection is. Libraries might have them. I don't know. That one's just a classic. I mean, if you delved deep enough, you might find a quasi-legal copy of it for free somewhere. Those Who Stay and Fight, I don't know where it was originally. I think you just have to buy How Long Till Black Future Month, or I have to lend you my copy, wherever the fuck it is, because I have a hard copy of it. But I highly recommend that whole collection. I mean, it's all the short stories written so far by my favorite author, so I highly recommend it. But yeah, the first one should be literally everywhere. Reach arbitrarily onto that bookshelf. You might secretly have a copy already hiding in one of your books.
Nope. There's not very much fiction on this shelf.
Such an evil shelf.
And this here is.
It's in there. Get it. Quick. No,
that's new for it.
Runs away.
That's new for
you. Know how, I say I don't generally have stress dreams?
No, I didn't know you generally said that.
Yeah, I said that. I don't generally. I used to in previous incarnations of my life, in previous careers, that were often very specific to those careers.
Yeah.
At Applied in the early days there, I would have dreams where somebody called in and I knew they needed to run a specific utility, but I couldn't remember the path there. It was like, it's UT214. I can't remember. And they were getting really mad on the phone. And I've talked before about the guy who fired me from that second newspaper. I have dreams ever since then that he comes and gets me fired from other jobs. But it's been a while since I've had stress dreams, in my opinion. I didn't have them in the last few years at ACT because I wasn't stressed. I was enjoying my job and obviously since, but I realized I do have them sometimes. They're not work related and they're weirdly specific. I've been waiting for this. Tell him I said hi.
I can't even see, my phone. I have to have glasses to see. And if I hold it far enough away where it's not blurry, it's too small.
I have started hitting the point that sometimes when stuff is close to my face, I have to look over my glasses to be able to read it.
You know what? I was gonna do a bit next time this happened, and I forgot. I was going to do the...
You were going to do the high talk fast voice so people thought their record player was broken?
No. I was actually going to pretend I was answering it, actually hanging up, and then I was going to put it up to my ear and do the whole, you don't say.
I was expecting.
And then when I hung up, I knew that you would know that bit would ask, who was it?
Yes, who was it?
They didn't say.
Oh my God, I didn't tell you this either.
I was going to do that bit.
So.
Forgot.
We'll get back to my stress dreams in a minute. But another cool thing, and you should be all over this. YouTube. Have you heard of it?
Seems like it.
So YouTube,
I'll have to Google it later.
Gets tired of, like, I've finished YouTube. YouTube is desperate for me to find new things for me.
Oh.
If there's even just a whiff of something. They're like, oh, you want a ton of that? Great. All right, let's give you a shitload of that. My wife watched one video on woodworking on my account. Now they're like, woodwork? I'm like, I don't care. It's like, no, take it. So every once in a while, it does something really random. And if I watch it, you know, whole new world. The other day, it tosses at me Madeline Kahn's big monologue from Paper Moon.
Well, I don't even remember that.
Me neither. I didn't know she was in the movie.
I think I did know that, but I think I forgot that too.
And to be fair, it didn't even say from Paper Moon. I figured it out watching. But she, for a little while, he dates her. She's just kind of a floozy, I guess. But there's a bit where the daughter runs out of the car and she has to go try and get her back. And she gives this whole monologue. And I'm like, I love Madeline Kahn. Let's watch it. It's like 2 minutes. So I watch it. And this is good. Not particularly funny, but well acted. And then YouTube's like, oh, Madeline Kahn, huh? Well, how would you like to see this opening bit between George Burns and Madeline Kahn on George Burns' variety show? And I was like, sure. And so it's George Burns and a very young Madeline Kahn, and they're essentially doing their own version of a Burns and Allen monologue. Mm-hmm. And it was quite funny. Yeah. I showed it to Trisha later. And then they're like, oh, Burns and Allen, huh? How would you like full episodes of the George Burns and Gracie Allen show on YouTube for free?
Wow.
Full episodes from back in the day where it was sponsored by Carnation, and we paused so that one of the characters from the show could come out and give us a recipe using Carnation evaporated milk, or tell us about how mothers should give it to their children, who then would just go back in and be a character in the show again.
Yep. Yep.
And guess what? Holds up. I mean, not the terrible advertising. It's funny.
Oh, yeah. Sure it is.
Like, yeah,
it's good stuff.
Find it on YouTube. It's funny. And it's also really weird to see a young George Burns. And I say young, I'm sure he's in his 40s, but damn. Like, if I wasn't warned ahead of time, I might have taken a little bit to recognize him.
You know, we went home for my sister's birthday last weekend, and Dad found on YouTube some YouTube videos of Captain Midnight.
Whoa.
And that he hadn't seen since he was a little kid.
Yeah, that's old.
And it was really interesting to watch him watch it because he got like all excited, like when he was a kid. And when it came to the part of the show where it's like, now get your decoder ring because we're going to give you the code. He was like all excited, like, oh man, because he had one and he. It's in the house somewhere and he doesn't know where it is. Like, this is weird that he's getting so excited about this, watching this on YouTube. But he was. It was like, wow, this is what was funny about that was, you know, especially
that's
my
That's how I was when we watched Lady Hawk. I kept going like, oh, I fucking love this movie.
Especially my brother and I have always, well, really Scott's been fans of a lot of things, and I was just a fan because he was, because I just wanted to do whatever he was doing. But it never really seemed very much like mom and dad ever took a lot of that seriously. But then to see him get so excited about Captain Midnight, it's like, wow. I mean, he's just like Scott was for Star
Wars. We're living in the era where that's okay to do as an adult.
So it's like, wow.
For your father, I am confident he had to stop liking Captain Midnight when he got older because probably. That's for little kids.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays we can be into it later on and shit.
But it was just so weird to realize that there was a time where he was excited about a TV show as my brother Scott was about a TV show or a movie.
And then he found out it was just saying, better drink your Ovaltine. Be sure to drink your Ovaltine. And
the thing is about that, though, because Ovaltine was their thing.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, Captain Midnight was Ovaltine. And Dad was excited about remembering Ovaltine and how good it was. So he was even excited about that. So I was like, I'd never seen Dad like that in my life, ever. I'd never seen him excited about anything. And he was like, and he actually, what he was doing was, while he was watching, not only was he excited, but like when the thing came up where they were going to decode the thing, he like said out loud, "Mom, give me a pad and pencil." Or he would like yell out to his mom to go get him something so he could write stuff down. It's like, this is weird. weird.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
But I had never seen that in him before. Like, I'd never seen him be sentimental or nostalgic. Well, I mean, maybe a few things, but very mildly. But not,
I mean, no, the shit when you're a kid is the shit when you're a kid.
Like, yeah, man. It was like, I mean, totally, truly got a window into what he was like when he was a kid. And I was so surprised to see him behaving so similarly to the way Scott did. And I think what surprised, another thing I thought about when it happened was, when he saw Scott act that way, he never indicated to us, oh, he's just like I was when I was a kid. You know, like, he didn't do that. He didn't, like.
Which maybe he didn't recognize it.
Possibly. That's interesting too, right?
Or maybe on a certain level. I mean, here's the other thing. And it's hard to remember this, because your parents are grown-ups, and your parents are grown-ups from the day you're born. And in a lot of our minds, there's, as a kid, yeah, right. You know, they're grown-ups, and they continue to be grown-ups. Whereas the rest of us are growing older, and we're watching it in real time. And but, like, there's a certain part of my brain that, like, however my dad was when he was 30, my brain kind of makes the assumption that that's basically the same guy when he's 70.
Exactly. That's kind of,
whereas there's no reason to think that.
No, right. That's right.
So,
that's right.
So there's every, to put out an absolutely random hypothetical, it's possible that back when your brother was into that, when he was younger or whatever, your dad kind of like thought that was not a good thing that he did when he was a kid, or something that he was embarrassed about, that now he is older and wiser to realize that it's a cool thing, and he sees it himself and he's okay
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
So it's possible that his view has changed also. But that sounds awesome. That's very cool.
Well, the thing is, when I ever think of dad, when we
Captain
were little,
Midnight is old as shit. That's like some Dumont Network bullshit. Like, that's no, why like the TV was a new thing and would give you cancer.
I think it was Dumont, actually, and it was,
yeah.
Captain Midnight wasn't even a space thing. It was an Air Force thing. He was like an Air Force pilot or whatever.
That's old. But, like, that makes the George Burns and Gracie Allen things look modern by comparison. Like, that's some old shit.
Well, Captain Midnight does go back to like the 30s or whatever, but of course he was watching the 50s version. Midnight goes back to the 30s, I said, yeah. Watching like the 50s version of it, obviously.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, but like, you know, when I remember when we were kids, if he was interested in doing stuff with us, it was very specific stuff, and it definitely didn't have anything to do with, you know, anything from TV or movies. It had to do with going outside and doing work on the farm or doing a sport. Doing some sports thing, which we weren't interested in. But, you know, when we were interested in stuff like that, that was similar to what he was interested in when he was a kid, he didn't like go, oh, I used to like that. Here, let's go do that. No, he just, he wasn't, like you said, maybe he didn't think we should be interested in those things.
Or maybe he outgrew it and didn't think about it for a while. Older people, the nostalgia really kicks in. So it's possible, had you shown him that video 20 years ago, he might have been like, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. I remember that.
No, you're right. But you know what else, though? He was an only child. And I think some of the stuff that we remember as kids and appreciate as kids comes somewhat from us all growing up together and telling stories to each other about it. And he didn't have any siblings to say, oh, D, you remember when this happened? Or you remember when that happened?
Yeah.
It's all just in his head, whether he remembers it or not.
Yeah. That's very cool, though.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I really liked that. I think he did, too. I think he was kind of tickled by the whole thing.
All right. But we are out of time.
That's the wonder of YouTube. That's one of the great things
about it. So much shit. If there's an old show that you're like, where the hell is it? It might be hiding around on YouTube, and nobody cares about licensing it, so it might all be there.
And it can be totally awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
We're out of time, so I guess people have to hear about what my stress dreams are about another time.
Oh, sorry.
talking
about my dad.
No, I have no idea what time it is. I just think it's hilarious to not tell people. So listen in next week. It's going to be episode 499. And then 2 days after that, we're going to record the big 500.
But we won't post it till the following
But then
Thursday,
we won't post it until after then. So for the like two of you who will just be listening... do that. Okay, and then otherwise, keep writing in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. We're on YouTube, so like and subscribe, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what they say, right?
Yeah, they do that. Say that. Share, too. They say share also.
Share. Click the little bell icon.
Yeah, just click the bell. That's right.
Leave a comment. No, don't leave a comment. Leave a comment on the blog instead. I don't like the YouTube comments. They're all about my body image.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.